All right, welcome everybody to the 2020 Aging in Place webinar series. Have some great panelists to speak today, and just glad everybody can make it out here. It's not quite the same as doing this in person like we have the last couple of years. I certainly miss the lunch that's provided. The lunch I brought today is nowhere near it. At every one of these Aging in Place events, I always introduce our housing action team, Johns County Livable Community Housing Action Team. They're the ones responsible for putting this together. I don't need to read things today. You guys are great at reading, so I'm going to let you look through there. The main people, main groups, entities involved in our housing action team are the Greater Iowa City Area Home Builders Association, the Iowa City Area Association of Realtors, and Johns County Livable Communities. But we have a lot of other members. This picture's a bit dated, but I do like the picture of Scott there. So Scott Hawes is the Housing Action Team Chair currently. Scott's also the Director of Helping Hands Program at Iowa Valley Habitat for Humanity. And then I'm back there. That's kind of what I look like if you see me in public, way in the back with that arrow. It's kind of when I have my mask on, that's what you'll see. So if you can recognize me there, that's me. If you missed any of the Aging in Place forums in the past, there is a link. You can go to our Livable Community website, go under the news, and there is a video collection. You can click on there, and I will look at providing this week PowerPoint that I've put together to everyone, so that's registered to this. If you don't have this, I do have my contact information at the end. You can email me or call me, and I can get this sent out to you as well. Just a note that some of our future Aging in Place events that are coming up here next month, we're going to be on June 10th. I think there's going to be a change. Estate planning when going on Medicaid, I believe, is going to get pushed back. We're having a little bit of an issue with speakers, so I will work through that with everybody who's already registered for that event. You can see that video collection once again down below. Getting right into some resources here, I want to keep in mind that, you know, a lot of the resources that are going to be shared today, at least by me, maybe things that become obsolete by the end of the week, tomorrow, month from now. Things are constantly changing. So, I'll tell you at the end, the best thing to do if you have any questions is to contact one of the panelists on here for immediate help on this. But some food resources, I'm guessing since we're about 2 months into the pandemic, people know about these resources that are available. Meal resources, free lunch program, Salvation Army, Meals on Wheels program is delivering frozen meals a week's worth every week. There's food delivery available through the food pantries. You just simply call that number, that 519-6165, and like magic, within 48 hours, you have food coming to you. Just utility assistance, the LIHEAP program, the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, that's been extended again through June 30th now of 2020. HACAP is, in this area, is who runs that. I put their website information on here. And then there's also the Energy Line number that you can call with questions on LIHEAP if you haven't been able to sign up for it. Right now, utility disconnections are not going on, but if you have utility bills, they can still potentially help you out with that. So they're a great resource to call. Masks, at this point, a lot of people have gotten their hands on masks, but if you're still out there in need of one, the Johnson County Iowa City Senior Center and Trail of Johnson County are working together to provide free masks for older adults. And there's another organization, Iowa City Erinders, who are also providing masks. You can go to their website. Iowa City Erinders is a new organization in the community. It's this kind of, it was created by a University of Iowa student. It's a lot of the volunteers are students that are involved in this organization, but they go out. You request an errand to be completed, whether it's a grocery pickup, Maybe it's medication pickup, whatever it is. If you have an errand to run, they can look to help you out with that. No cost to do it, and pretty straightforward and simple. So simply just let, click on their link and you can see all the great information there. Mental health assistance. There is a lot of places you can go for mental health assistance. These are not new things that are out there right now. Community, formerly the crisis center, has some great, has the crisis call text line right there. They also have crisis by chat that you can go to their website and do. Mobile crisis, they've done a lot of different things to help out. National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI. We have a local chapter here in Johnson County, and there's the website for that in NAMI, Iowa. Some things to know about NAMI, they have some online virtual support groups that are happening throughout the pandemic. They have a lot of great videos on mental health, and it's available in multiple languages as well. Another great resource is the Iowa Warm Line. So the Warm Line, maybe you're just feeling down, you just want to talk to somebody. It's a great number to be able to utilize, just to be able to have another person to talk to. In this time when, people are more isolated than maybe they were before, it's nice to just have somebody you can talk to. And then really just where to start if you need some help. If you're looking for some assistance, Johnson County Social Services, there's a lot of great resources, our General Assistance Program, Navigator Program. Steve is there as the navigator. Aging specialist, that's me. I hope I'm a good resource. And then we have panelists from the Heritage Area Agency on Aging and Access to Independence who can talk about things. And I'm sorry, it looks like I totally butchered yours there on the slide, Sarah. It says Access to Independence Access. Sorry. I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to Harrison March. Harrison is the Community Engagement Coordinator at Heritage Area Agency on Aging.
Thanks, Jeff. And I appreciate not only the introduction, but just the opportunity to do this. I think it's really cool to bring all of our agencies and the work that we do together, because we look pretty separate sometimes on the surface or geographically, but I know a lot of times we cross paths at resource fairs, and even Sarah's on our board of directors at Heritage, and there's a lot of work that we do together to support each other, so I appreciate it. Everything that we do at Heritage just kind of revolves around this theme, that there's no place like home. The vast majority of older adults said so in an AARP survey from a year or two ago, that they want to remain in their current residence as long as possible. That number goes up even a couple more percentage points when you expand that to saying, I want to remain in my community as long as possible. To do that, though, a lot of people, about two-thirds of older adults, are going to need some type of long-term support service by the time they turn 60, 65, start getting into that older adult category. That's where Heritage and really area agencies on aging all around come into play. We serve adults that are ages 60 and older, adults living with disability, and caregivers as well. How we serve them? We offer services not only through our staff, but by connecting you. Like I mentioned earlier, we do a lot of work with these other agencies and organizations, so we can connect you to other services that are available in your community if it's not something that Heritage staff can do themselves. We provide funding throughout our service area to help these programs get to every nook and cranny, every community in our 7-county region, because just because somebody lives way up in the northwest corner, way down in the southeast corner of where we are, we want to make sure that the services can get to them as best as possible. That funding comes down from state and federal levels, and then Heritage is the local office that helps get it into the right hands and helps get those services ultimately out to folks. We provide information and referral assistance when you've just got questions and don't always know where to start. You might know, I need help with finding meals because I had a fall recently. I can't leave the home to get groceries, but I don't know who's my local provider. What do they have available? Are there going to be certain kind of costs or eligibility requirements? And so we get all that information to you, help you make a smart, informed choice for yourself. We're also advocates for older adults or adults with disability and our caregivers, not only locally and in their networks where they need to find support for their own personal needs, but all the way up to state and national government levels as well, trying to advocate for the passage of laws and new regulations that improve quality of life. You can see our service map there on the right-hand side, Johnson County, smack dab in the middle, and then we also serve those others right around. There is an agency on aging in every county in Iowa and every county in the United States. So whether you're living here in Johnson, maybe you've got a friend over in Des Moines that needs some help, you can get in touch with any area agency on aging to find access to these same, if not very similar, services. At Heritage, all of our staff are working remotely right now. You can see my beautiful beige walls at my home behind me, but our core programs are remaining intact as best we can. Those focus on nutrition and wellness. So like I mentioned earlier, home-delivered meals. Hopefully we can get back to some congregate dining settings as well in the future. Those are completely shut down right now for safety reasons, but we have adapted to do some food distributions to increase funding for Meals on Wheels and other home delivered programs as well. We've moved our Tai Chi classes online. So if you're on Facebook, take a look at our page, and we also have them on our website. And Brian, he's our wellness coordinator. He can guide you through the steps of Tai Chi for older adults. Our caregiver support program provides counseling, options counseling, and case management for caregivers who are needing support. Maybe you're adjusting to your role. Maybe you've been a caregiver for 20 years, and all of a sudden things are a lot harder now with the COVID-19 pandemic, and you just need that extra support. You need to find resources that are going to make it easier for you. Our elder rights program is especially important right now because a lot of folks are trying to be safe and staying at home. But unfortunately, that means that some folks are at home with someone who might be neglecting or abusing them. And we want to make sure that we can help those older adults get out of that situation and then also create some sort of plan that can last long term. We don't just want to pluck you out of there for a couple of nights, say, hey, fix A, B, and C and head back in there. We're going to help you create a plan that's going to last long term. Make sure that solution is sustainable going forward. I touched on information, referral, and assistance a little bit earlier, and that can also lead into any of these other programs. You know, if you call needing something that is a program Heritage offers, referral part gets made to our other coworkers or other staff, and they'll help you out. Options counseling can be a part of that, just helping you plan for the future and making sure you're getting follow-up, getting support so that whatever plan you have for aging in your home and in your community, that you're able to do it and you have the support that you need, not only today, tomorrow, but well into the future. Lastly on here, our role as an aging and disability resource center. That comes in pretty closely, with our information, referral, and assistance, but it focuses especially on long-term support services that adults with disability may need so that they can stay in their home for as long as possible. Specific to current events, we recently, about a month and a half ago, launched our Unmet Needs Registry, which really just seeks to fill in the gaps. There are a lot of things that maybe you can get 90, 95% of what you need to stay in your home, stay healthy, stay independent, but they're just missing those little extra pieces. So we try to help you locate essential supplies like masks, like shelf-stable food items, all sorts of things that maybe are available in your community. And we can say, hey, organization ABC has got it available. We'll get you in touch with them. Sometimes the best solution is Heritage staff needs to just pack up a bag and come drop it off on your front door so that we can make a no contact delivery and get those items to you as quickly as possible. The program is designed for older adults. Those are ages 60 and older without access to it through other means. So if you're homebound and just have that need going right now, call our office. The phone number is listed there and it'll be on the next slide as well. And let them know what supplies you're looking for. We'll get in touch, get that process initiated for you. Like I said earlier too, most of our core programs are still running. A couple of them have had some adjustments, switching from offering one meal that you come sit down and enjoy around a table with friends to doing some meal distribution sites. Our home visits, we've paused for now. That is a big part, being able to make sure we can visit people in home, but we are still communicating with folks over phone, over Zoom, like with this meeting, electronically through email. Want to make sure we can get you as close to the regular service as possible, despite the fact that we're going through quite an ordeal right now. Information for our agency is available right there. And I know Jeff had our website information up on the up on his slides. And so all that's available there as well. My role as community engagement coordinator, I can answer, I'll try to answer any question that I can, but sometimes with the nitty gritty specifics, the best solution really is just to call and speak with our information referral and assistance specialist. And so she's kind of our front line and can get you out to the correct people. So my role is really to talk about the agency, promote our services, spread the word like we're doing here today. So I will do my best to answer questions, but I may also just say, hey, give our agency a call because they're going to be the ones with access to an encyclopedia of information that's ultimately going to be the most help to you. That is all from me right now. I appreciate it, Jeff.
Thank you, Harrison. Well, I don't, just a reminder, if you do have questions for any of the panelists, you can, if you're on Zoom, which there are a number of people on Zoom, you can just go to that Q&A button at the bottom, click it. You can go ahead and type in a question in there. If you're on Facebook, and I think I just lost my Facebook connection. I'm trying to monitor that as well and see if anything comes in there as far as questions. So we'll just move on to Sarah here. Sarah Martinez is the executive director at Access to Independence and is filling in at the last minute today. So Sarah, I really appreciate you being able to fill in.
Thank you so much for the introduction, Jeff. Yes, full disclosure, another one of my staff had anticipated on being here with you today, but unfortunately is out sick. And so I'm a little jealous, Harrison. I don't have a fancy PowerPoint. However, I do have a website that we can cruise around today. So I'm going to go ahead and share screen. Access to Independence is the local disability resource center for the seven counties that Heritage serves in addition to Henry County all the way to the south, so eight counties in all. We serve persons with disabilities of all ages and provide supports to different providers, family members to make sure that persons with disabilities can be as independent as possible in the community to live, work, and play how they choose. So I'd like to show our core services. We have a lot of overlap with Heritage's services. However, we do focus on all ages. So our first service would be individual and systems advocacy. We provide supports to individuals to get access to benefits they may be eligible for. Examples would be Social Security, unemployment, food stamps, anything like that, that Medicaid, anything that someone might need to be successful. In addition to that, if there's any concerns with services, supports, housing, if they need any support and advocacy with those, we provide that. Independent living skills training, if there's any specific skills that someone might need to be independent, cooking, cleaning, financial management, social skills, we create a plan with the individual to provide those. Information and referral, this would be understanding resources that would be available to them, answering any questions, and then getting them connected to the resources that they need. We provide peer counseling, something that is unique to Access to Independence as a center for independent living is that in order to receive our federal funding, over 51% of our staff and board are persons with disabilities themselves. So our staff members provide peer support in sharing how their disability affects them and how they navigate and cope. And we provide that support to others with a, you know, describing shared experiences. And lastly, we provide transition services to two different populations. One would be transition from institution. So that would be nursing homes, jail, prison, any kind of state institution, and getting all the supports that they need to integrate back into the community. We know that this is a really big need right now. You know, nursing homes can be kind of a precarious place to be right now. And so we are working on increasing our transition services to help more people get back into the community if that's what they'd like to do. Additionally, we provide youth transition services for high school students who have exited any kind of services and help them get connected to adult services and independent living supports. So we have newly hired a youth outreach coordinator who serves 14 to 24. So specifically talking about COVID, as of March 23rd, we transitioned all of our staff to work remotely and have continued to provide all of our services and supports remotely. And so if there's anything that someone might need, we're trying to do phone, texts, emails, and video calls to help provide those services. We have specifically made a webpage to compile COVID-19 resources and information, and then also specifically our services that we're providing that in response to the pandemic. So if you go to our homepage and you click on this COVID-19 resources page, it'll take you to our service changes and updates. So we have started Monday through Thursday at 1 o'clock, a peer support call. The call information is listed on our website. If you need someone to talk to, connect, that time is for people to, you know, have some social interactions and know that you're not alone in this. And staff have really enjoyed providing this. The groups have been pretty small, so it can be kind of an intimate setting. We have changed our self-advocacy group that used to be held once a week at NAMI Art Place to a virtual weekly group. The video conferencing on Google Hangouts information is listed here on our website. And we've been talking about different advocacy topics once a week, but also it's again, a good time to check in and get connection with some other people. In partnership with HACAP and Kelly's Kitchen, we have a food box request. So if we have anyone who's outside of Johnson County that can't get access to maybe some of the mobile resources through community or our other providers, we are happy to drop off a 25-pound shelf-stable food box to your door. If there's additional grocery needs, we have received federal funding to help provide food security, and we'll be doing that through September 2021. So if there's any kind of outstanding food needs, don't hesitate to get in contact with us. And then we also just have some good resources, information about COVID-19 that's disability specific, employment information, unemployment, education, and then different benefits and services available. Additionally, we have been charged with helping. I'm going to stop sharing this now. We have been charged with kind of helping people get access to technology. And so we have funding in place to help upgrade cell phones to make sure people have access to remote services and telehealth and getting connected to Wi-Fi if they don't have that already available to them. And then we also, like Heritage, can provide personal care necessities, hand sanitizer, soap, face masks. So if there's kind of any outstanding needs, don't hesitate to contact us. That's it.
All right. Well, thank you, Sarah. I really appreciate the information. I know I'm kind of figuring out that live streaming on Facebook is just a little bit behind, but it doesn't look like we have any questions right this second. I do have somebody who's trying to get access. So I'm going to turn it over to probably the person a lot of people are interested in hearing from, who's Sam Jarvis, our Community Health Division Manager at Johns County Public Health. You may see Sam frequently on the weekly press conferences that the county is having. He is a frequent contributor, I would say. So Sam, go ahead and take it away.
Hey, so Jeff, thank you for having us. And Harrison, Sarah, thank you for sharing the information. A lot of great information that I was not aware of, and happy to share that as well with our folks, because I think that's extremely beneficial given kind of just how disruptive COVID-19 has been. So thank you for that. Jeff, thank you again for the opportunity. For those of you who don't know, I'm with Johnson County Public Health, and since March 8th, we've been heavily involved in the COVID response, given our role for investigating disease. And so since then, the department has had two disease investigators assisting with that. And then going forward, given the amount of cases that we were seeing, have onboarded other staff to either investigate disease or support that workflow. And so we've rapidly kind of expanded our disease investigation team in response to that. Much like the rest of Johnson County, other staff's work duties have either been shifted or moved to telework, and there are other kind of regulations and rules that have been altered for us to be able to provide services to the clients that we serve, given kind of the program requirements that the state has. So on our end, that's kind of what we've been working here on at Johnson County Public Health. And as always, we've been taking calls from the public and businesses, which we're encouraging. So if you we aren't able to get your questions today, please reach out to us. You can call us at 319-356-6040. Please reach out to us with any questions and concerns you have. We're wanting to ensure and let everyone know that we're wanting to make the commitment to reach out to as many people as possible with their concerns, because we know that throughout all of this response and throughout what we've seen as a state and a nation, the information changes quite quickly. We are dealing with that as well, and we recognize how frustrating that is and can be. And so we want to make sure that we're providing everyone with the most up-to-date information possible. So I think one of the notes that Jeff wanted us to touch base on was just different myths and things about COVID-19. As we see the state reopening and some of those restrictions that were originally in place to implement social distancing and physical distancing, we're going to continue to urge everyone to take the most cautious and safe approach possible. Certainly recognizing the situation it's somewhat concerning, seeing other persons not socially distanced and things like that, but always reminding people that keeping 6 foot is one of the highest precautions that one can take, and then obviously frequent hand washing and wearing a mask when out in public if you're within that 6 foot distance. I think one of the things we see are people out for a run having one on by themselves. Certainly not necessary, but having one on you if you think you're going to meet up with other people. We get questions about glove use and things. Again, certainly not always necessary unless you're doing the activities that you usually would wear a glove with, either cleaning or taking care of someone else who is ill. But other than that, happy to take any questions or talk about any other topics that anyone has. So.
Thus far, I just have the one question that's come in. I know Sarah's already replied to it, but are there any income restrictions on the services for Heritage and Access to Independence? I know Sarah's already responded to that the only eligibility for Access to Independence services is identifying as a person with a disability. Harrison, I don't know if you want to answer that for Heritage, though.
Sure, yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. For the programs that I mentioned, as far as income restrictions, there are not. There are some, such as the first one I think of is the Farmers Market Nutrition Program that's put on by the state. That one, there is an income threshold that participants need to be at or below, since it's targeted for lower income, older adults. The ones I mentioned earlier, though, there are not. In terms of age, the ones for older adults, that's generally defined as age 60 and older. That comes from state and federal mandates for how those programs are set up and funded and operated. Adults with disability, I know I used that term a few times as well. That's anyone 18 and older living with a disability. And then I believe I heard Sarah mention they've got a new youth outreach coordinator who works with some who are a little younger than the age of 18 as well. So that's a gap that we don't have the services to address, is that teenage kind of those years, but it sounds like Sarah and her team have got that covered through some of their work as well.
I have a couple more questions. One on Facebook that I'll throw to Sam here. Sam, I think somebody's looking to ask some, if you could kind of talk about sharing the information on Facebook and other social media about COVID-19. They commented that they've seen individuals post rumors about hospitals lying on death certificates about the cause of death, and think that these rumors are harmful to the good work that the EOC and others are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for bringing that up. I've not seen anything like that specifically, but I'll definitely touch base with our public information team. And so for everyone watching, we do have a pretty good group of individuals who are looking through our social media and helping plan press releases and press conferences and other information pushes that we do. And another part of that, their duties and what they're tasked with, they are looking for rumors. And we're doing our best to address those as quickly as possible, because we know that, like many are probably very familiar with, you know, with Facebook and the ability to share information very quickly. We want to do our best to tackle all those different issues. So thank you for that.
I have another question. This is for everybody. Do any of the representatives, that's you guys, panelists, anticipate permanent changes from this pandemic situation? Harrison, do you want to?
Sure. Yeah. That at this time, as far as permanent changes, they could be long-term changes, though. That's for sure. For example, our congregate dining centers that we fund or that we operate, like the Encore Cafe here in Cedar Rapids, Marion, that our heritage staff actually work at, those fall under a couple different categories for closures throughout the state, as restaurants and as senior centers. So they've got to be cleared on both of those fronts. I know restaurants in the state are opening back up. If I'm not mistaken, it's 50% with social distancing and some other guidelines as well. But we also have to wait for senior centers to get clearance on that. So that may be quite a while, considering that seniors are an at-risk population. It also may be, if things really trend positively here in the next few months, it could be a pretty short-term change. It's really hard to predict permanent right now, but I do think that it's quite possible that some of these are long-term, at least for the next several weeks and maybe even months.
Thanks, Harrison. Sarah, do you want to chime in at all?
I would say that's the same boat that we're in. We have not set a return date for staff to go back to the office and have kind of decided to continue remote services indefinitely until we have more information that it's safer to do so. And because those we serve are, you know, can be vulnerable populations. So we want to make sure we make good decisions for everyone. I think for the short term and potentially for the fall as well, based on information we're getting that this may be coming back, like the flu similarly, we will continue to do no contact services and try to get as much as we can accomplished through virtual formats.
Terrific. Sam, you're probably the biggest expert on here to kind of chime in on this topic. I don't know what you have to say.
I think in terms of permanent changes, I think we're seeing them out in public right now, and that's the use of face masks. Obviously during the flu season before this, we really didn't see that a whole lot as a state and a nation. And I think going forward, we'll see more of that. And so that's one of the biggest pieces that I think we've been, the department, trying to do our best in educating on and everything, and the proper way to use a mask and mask use. And that's washing your hands before you put the mask on and making sure that it's the right material, and still encouraging persons to leave masks like N95s for our healthcare workers. I think the surgical masks are more widely available now, but if not that, a cloth mask is also appropriate. And there's guidance on the CDC site on some of the best materials to make that out of, things like that. I think a lot of times you'll see people kind of have a mask half on, half off, and things like that. And then you'll certainly questions about reusing and everything. So things like single-use masks, that's it really is for single use. So if you have that on all day, it's best not to use it for the next day, but we also recognize that sometimes they are hard to find. Cloth masks, obviously, being laundered when soiled or they get damp, things like that. So that'll be, a continued piece going forward. But in terms of permanent, that's about it. And I think we'll see the physical distancing stay around for a bit until we can figure out a vaccine or see for treatment. So I do see a question from Bob Welsh about offering advice to businesses and churches and others. Again, there's a lot of guidance out there on the CDC and the IDPH's website that we're encouraging people to view and go through, but we're encouraging people to call us about those types of questions they have, because we know that one size glove or, you know, one size doesn't fit all approach. And so we know that some places have a large capacity, right? And they're calculating what their 50% might look like, and others are not. Some have fixed kind of seating and things like that. They have different processes for serving clients and customers. And so we're happy to talk that through with everyone. So thank you for the question.
Yeah, terrific. Well, thank you all for the responses there. I don't think I have much to add there. I mean, maybe we're going to see an accompaniment to public meetings and you know, events like this that we'd normally do in public, there very well could be the ability to do these as webinars going forward as a permanent change. I don't know that for certain, but I could certainly see that as we try and make sure we're reaching the populations that are isolated at home and don't have the ability to get out even outside of a pandemic period. Looks like questions are really flying in now. Sam, are face shields a good alternative to masks? Are they better than masks for safety purposes?
Yeah, that's a great question. So face shields, so real quick, the face covering or mask over the nose and mouth help protect others. It's less of a protection for yourself, while it could be, and I think there's a lot of research being done on that fact. Face shields are wonderful because it's really protecting you from respiratory droplets coming towards your face, your eyes, your nose and mouth. And so I think what you'll see people take, what they could take as one of the highest precautions is wearing a face mask and face shield. And so they certainly offer protection for the wearer. The cloth mask is protection for everyone else. And so the idea is that if we're all wearing face masks out in public, you know, at the grocery store and things like that, we're all doing our part to protect each other.
Terrific. Another one for you, Sam, and I kind of anticipated you were going to get most of these. What are the latest findings on how long the virus can live on a variety of surfaces?
So initially on, there was an article from the New England Journal of Medicine, and they had done some studies and found out that the virus can live on different surfaces for different periods of time, ranging from a couple hours to longer. And so I think that caused quite a bit of concern, and that makes sense. And so, you know, again, with something like this or other viruses or bacteria, we want to encourage people to wash their hands if they're doing a lot of high-touch surface things, doorknobs, keyboards, and things like that. I think that article spurred a lot of persons wanting to wear gloves for everything. And so while, you know, again, it's they're finding out the kind of the technical pieces of COVID-19 or coronavirus, I think it's best to remember that, again, you know, watching out for coughs and sneezes when people are infectious. They're most infectious when they're being able to out in public when ill. That's the worry. Touching surfaces and things like that are a lower concern. So certainly encouraging people to wipe down those surfaces and wash their hands more frequently.
Well, somebody submitted something. I wouldn't say it's not a question, but I'll turn it into a question. I'll try to, at least. Let me see here. Their comment is that the CDC and WHO provide conflicting information at times, so it's difficult to know what is accurate. What do you suggest people do when they're hearing conflicting information from those types of entities? Would it be to call public health?
Yeah, absolutely. And without knowing exactly which piece that is, it's hard to kind of know what the question is, but certainly, you know, we would defer to our state health department and the CDC. I know that they have frequent communication. And so if people have questions about that, please feel free to call us. So.
Sure. I don't know. They're saying conflicting information about wearing masks.
Oh, okay. I'd have to look at what specific pieces there are about that. But I know recently, and we, you know, even here, we check the CDC site pretty frequently because we don't technically get alerts of when that information changes on their page. I know in the bottom right-hand corner, they usually put a last revised date. And so I would encourage everyone when they're looking at that site to kind of see the date of revision. But in terms of masks, you know, I think everyone right now hopefully is on the same page across the state and in line with the CDC about face masks. And that is to wear them when out in public, especially when you anticipate being within 6 feet. So again, like I mentioned earlier, if you're out for a walk by yourself, not necessary. You know, you're outside on a solitary walk or anything like that, but going to the store or pharmacy and things like that, you know, you might be passing someone in an aisle and things like that. So.
Terrific. Well, wait for potentially some additional questions to come in, but this seems like a good time to make this a little interactive for you attendees that are on Zoom. We have a poll that I'm launching right now. So hopefully you're able to see this. You can, pretty simple. There's five questions. You just click them. Most of these are just one, except for number five. You can have multiple choice answers. Sam, somebody just noted on Facebook that as far as they've read, facing someone for any length of time, even with masks, is not advisable. Do you have any comment about that or anything to add?
Yeah, sure, certainly. You know, as always, you know, right now there's a lot of unknown kind of aspects of what the future will hold. But obviously, we saw a lot of safer at home kind of messaging. And so the idea, you know, when you are physically distancing yourself, that is the safest precaution, right? And so now we're seeing the option and ability to be out more. There's going to be more restaurants and businesses opening up and things like that. And so we're certainly encouraging people when they go about these activities to be as safe as possible. So that's where things like face masks and face shields come into play. So.
I'm muted, of course. I was just checking the poll here. It looks like we have just about 58% of those on Zoom have voted. I'm not sure. Come on. I won 100%. I have high expectations, I know. The first question probably isn't even a fair question. Those on Facebook, you can probably answer this as well, because registering for and attending the forums it ranges from very difficult to very easy. And I'm guessing if you're not on this Zoom call, it may not have been easy. So I would like to know if anybody's having difficulties getting into these events, you know, what we can do to help make that easier in the future, since we are looking at doing the series of these. Wow. And people, thus far, I'm seeing that people are saying it's very easy. And the second question, I'm going to go ahead and I'll end the polling on here, and I'll be able to share the results to everybody so you can see what y'all think. But I'm surprised that people say that these are both equally awesome as far as after seeing an online forum, I prefer them to attending one in person. I want to attend one in person. I just can't safely do it right now. I want the food, I think, is mainly, you know, it's a big part of it. Plus, I want to be able to see folks in person. So let me see, I think we have possibly something in chat here. It's too many screens for me, I don't know. I'm glad you guys are keeping up on chat because I was missing chat there. Looking to see if we have anything else here. Do not see any other questions right now, but if question rolls in here or something else comes in through chat. Oh, sorry.
So Jeff, and from Maggie, are your services available to people who are not U.S. citizens? And I did respond to everyone that we do not require citizenship status to provide our services, but they do, however, have to live in our service area and identify as a person with a disability. I don't know if Harrison also would like to provide Heritage's information.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. I pulled up some of the information that I know Heritage will ask for. There are demographic things that we do need to cover to make sure that people meet our eligibility for, like Sarah said, living in the service area, maybe being an older adult or being an adult with disability. On top of that, they may ask for phone number for contact information to follow up and helping manage your case or doing, like I said, follow up work with you. And then date of birth might ask for the type of insurance you have, which will help determine eligibility for other programs, waivers, and other services, and then may ask your annual income. And these are all just things to make sure that we can report demographic data to the state for who we're serving and to make sure that you're eligible for the services and programs we make referrals for. There are not citizenship restrictions on our services.
And yeah, anybody working with our department, citizenship isn't a requirement, but yes, living in Johnson County would be the requirement. Obviously, access to some of the programs that might be available may be affected, but we would not turn away somebody due to citizenship issues. Oh, Scott, thank you. I failed to cover this question. So if we must have a person enter our home, like a plumber, electrician, what precautions should we take? And you guys can add on to this, but I had this one already worked up and I just totally went over it in my presentation. But for workers in the home, it's a great idea to clear the area prior to that tradesperson coming. If he or she has to move things around, it increases exposure for you and them. Obviously, to decrease the distance between you and the tradesperson, designate an entrance if possible. If it's safe to do so, you can leave the door unlocked and communicate this with the office staff about which way to have them enter. You certainly ask the tradesperson to wash, sanitize their hands upon arrival. And then you can also talk with them too. I mean, keep a great, distance, but wipe down areas with disinfectant wipes after the tradesperson leaves if they're not doing that already. A lot of them might be doing that already, but you may feel more comfortable doing that after they're gone as well. And this keeps happening to me because my sensor is blocked. I think it's the third time my lights have gone off. I was going to say one other thing about this, and it totally slipped my mind. Sarah, it's your dog. It's distracting me. It's too cute. But we do have another question that looks like it's come in. Any guesstimate on when the Johnson County Iowa City Senior Center will open? How about the Iowa City Public Library? I don't know if any of you have any information, crystal balls, to answer such a question, but I think that those two will be opened up at the same time. There might be some restrictions as they open up. I do know that, Johnson County Iowa City Senior Center and the Iowa City Public Library are doing a great job of having information available. The Johnson County Iowa City Senior Center has a lot of great virtual activities. So if you're able to connect to this, you'll be able to connect to a lot of the offerings that they have going on. Check out their Facebook page. It's a great resource, or their website. They've had, workouts, arts. There's so much great information that they've been able to provide to folks. And I know that's just one place. They just did a training yesterday, Iowa City Public Library and the Senior Center together, about, how to use Zoom, getting comfortable with this just yesterday afternoon. So there's a lot of interesting, great programs and a lot of resources. I know it's not quite the same as all of us being together at a place and being able to access it, but I would be remiss if I put in a guesstimate. You know, I think it's, things are just constantly evolving, and you know, we just don't know what the information will be like here in another week or two, but hopefully there'll be some opening later on this summer, at least in some form or fashion.
Jeff, I think it's worth sharing that if anyone needs Johnson County seats for transportation, that they are back up and running, but need advance notice for rides because many of their drivers were furloughed. And so they are requesting kind of advance notice to set something up.
Good point, Sarah. Yes, and transportation, it's one of those two that I believe they're requesting that everyone wear a mask while they're being transported on Johnson County seats as well. I know public transit systems have also asked people to wear masks and enter through the back of the bus. Sam, do you anything else about transportation that maybe you might be overlooking as well?
No, another thing I can think of off the top of my head, whatever service that you use, more than likely they'll have some other enhanced kind of safety precautions to take. So just be aware of those and everything. So, but that's a great point, wearing a mask and everything. And so.
Yeah, and I know we have a mobility coordinator here in our social services department. They do a great job of maintaining a web page on the social services site. It's actually their own web page. A lot of up-to-date information if you are using public transit and want to know. I mean, currently there's no fees, but that can change at any time. What routes have been affected, all sorts of great information like that. I think you'll find a lot of good information if you go to that website, and I can include that to anybody who's interested. It looks like we're getting close to the point here. There's no more questions right this second, so I'm just going to remind everybody that next webinar that we have for our Aging in Place series is going to be June 10th. It's going to be a mystery as far as what the topic will be because we're looking at changing around that order a little bit. If you have signed up on SignUp Genius, I'll be in contact with you to make sure that we get you connected with the right webinars. If you have recently gone on to SignUp Genius, you might notice a few changes on there. We upgraded yesterday, and as a result, we're able to customize the emails that come from your sign up so that you can get the information directly when you register. Also, you'll notice now that there's many tabs for each of the different sessions. Well, that's so I can make sure that the customized message you get goes to the right webinar that you're signing up for. Otherwise, you're going to get information about just this webinar that's just happening and is going to be over in about 30 seconds. So, want to thank our panelists, Harrison, Sarah, and Sam. Sarah, you have something to add. Go ahead.
Yeah, the chat, we got one more from Sarah Barron, it looks like. She asked if we covered information about eviction and foreclosure moratorium and help with paying rent.
No, we did not cover that at all. And I don't even have latest in front of me here, but Sarah is really good specialist when it comes to evictions, foreclosures, and you know, a rental assistance. One thing I'll say is I know that United Way had a disaster relief fund and they may still have that active. That's helped out a ton of people. They've given out approximately $100,000 to individuals in the community. That would be a place I'd go to. Obviously, our general assistance program here at Johns County Social Services may be able to assist individuals who, you know, are having a difficult time paying for those things. Legal, there is some different, you know, legal assistance that's out there. I know the Older Islands Legislature, you're going to have to help me here. Drawn a blank on what it's called, but there's a Older Islands hotline that's available to help people out. Sarah, help me.
Are you through Iowa Legal Aid?
Thank you. That's one place you can go to. know, Heritage might actually have some legal assistance as well through their services.
Yeah, I can't speak to housing issues specifically, but we do subcontract with a lawyer who represents older adults throughout the region. So if you do have questions about that, definitely we can help make a referral and get your foot in the door there.
Sure. And Sarah said, you know, if people do have questions about evictions, any of that, you can contact her directly. Her email address, Sarah, S-A-R-A, at jcaffordablehousing.org, all together. And looks like there might be another question that snuck in there. If you missed this today, you're okay. We have recorded this. You will be able to view this again. I don't ever want to see myself have to watch myself. I hate that. But the other people were stupendous. I really am thankful for Harrison, Sarah, Sam for being panelists and sharing all this great information about your organizations and the resources out there. And a big thank you to Ty Coleman as well. Ty from City Channel 4 has been with us for the last couple of years recording all of these, whether it's a forum or a webinar. And, so we'll be able to play that back as well through, as a result of Ty doing this. So thank you to everybody. And I think that's it, unless anybody else has anything else to share. I'll take that as a no. We're done, folks. Thanks so much for coming to the first webinar. We look forward to seeing you on June 10th.
Thank you.